Alex, knock, knock.
Who's there?
It's the Risk Science Podcast, episode 12. Hey, everybody. This is Allison Miller. Welcome to the Risk Science Podcast. With me tonight is the whole crew, Jay Jacobs. How are you doing?
Great. Thanks for asking.
Right on. And Chris Hayes, how are you?
I am excellent. I'm here with my brand new Microsoft Surface Pro 2 sitting on my couch with my legs up podcasting.
Hey, hey.
Did they give you money for saying that, Chris?
No, but I replaced my MacBook Pro that is 7 years old with this piece of technology, and I'm loving every second of it.
I thought, Alex, you were going to say, did they give you money to take that?
We are accepting sponsorship applications, and Surface Pros, I think, would be accepted.
Oh, absolutely.
Okay. Alex Hutton, how are you this evening?
I'm awesome.
Oh, so as per usual.
He's yeah. Alex Hutton tonight.
I'm LL Cool A. Ladies love cool Alex.
Okay.
So tonight's topic we're going to kick off with is working title so far, hasn't gotten a director quite yet, but benchmarks, standards, and best practices, oh my. So last episode we talked a little bit about some of the foundational elements, how to get started developing your very own risk program and what we might recommend for folks who are just getting started. And tonight, what we would like to kick around the laboratory a little bit is, how do you figure out where you are? It can be very overwhelming with all of the different frameworks and techniques out there. So what do we think is available that is effective for folks to use as a way to guide their efforts, figure out where they are in the maturity curve, and where their risk program is and needs to get moving? So on that topic, Chris has stumbled across something recently. Chris, why don't you tell us a little bit about it?
So, yeah, something that I recently have stumbled across, which may serve as a starting point for an organization to begin assessing where they may be at with the maturity of their risk management program, is actually some standards that have been developed as part of the Basel II AMA assessment. And AMA stands for Advanced Measurement Approach. And there's really 33 standards that an organization may be sort of judged against in determining, you know, sort of the robustness or maturity of their risk management program. And while Basel is really, in the financial services industry, seems to be, you know, one of the frameworks that organizations are going to be measured against, it shouldn't scare people off from actually embracing the standard and actually evaluating it and judging themselves against it. Because even though it may be for financial services organizations, you can scale some of these standards down and then compare yourself against these standards. So here would be an example of one of the standards that they outline. I'm going to go to the second standard. It says the board of directors must oversee the development of the firm-wide operational risk framework, as well as major changes to the framework. Management roles and accountability must be clearly established. So while this sounds like a very lofty standard that would apply to, you know, a Fortune 500 or larger organization, just scale it down. Say senior management must oversee the development of a firm-wide risk framework, as well as changes to that framework, and roles and accountability must be clearly defined. Whether you're a Fortune 100... Go ahead.
No, go ahead, Chris. Whether you're a Fortune 100 or...
Whether you're a Fortune 100, one Fortune 1000, or just a small mom-and-pop shop, this is like one bare minimum standard that you can judge yourself against. Is your senior management even overseeing what you do? And is your role actually defined? And is their role as a senior leadership of the organization, are they accountable for effective risk management? Go ahead, Alex.
No, I was just saying, I actually think this is a great idea. I mean, some people have to shoot for, hey, is senior management just vaguely aware that risk is a thing and there's a person on staff that worries about it? but actually having and setting something up where there's a regular discussion, you know, you can get formal like us Bosley types do and have committees and so forth, or you can simply try and get yourself 30 minutes on a regular calendar basis, even just quarterly, to talk to executives about your work and see if it's of benefit to them. But I think this is a great place to start, because most people that I've come across are kind of like, oh crap, there's a new risk management thing in PCI. Do we have one of those risk management things? Do we buy them? Are they 1U and fit in a rack? What do we do with that? and they literally have no idea, right? And so this is actually a really good place. And I think it's a great idea, your talk of even scaling it down.
Right. I mean, here's another standard. The board of directors and management must ensure that appropriate resources are allocated to support the operational risk framework. So let's dumb that down. People that lead this company are responsible for ensuring that appropriate resources are allocated to do risk management. I mean, that's like a minimum twice a year conversation, maybe once a year conversation. Are you even having a conversation once a year to say, hey, I don't think I may have the resources, or by the way, management, you're ultimately accountable for ensuring we're managing risk and that you're enabling us to do so. It just sounds like common sense to me.
So could we kind of wrap this up for the listeners? Can we say really we talked about the crawl stage. We're talking about the walk stage. The first part of walk stage really should be get senior management buy-in and establish something somewhat regular / formal to have a risk conversation.
Sure. Do you even have some type of an oversight function?
Do you even oversight, bro?
What? Such what? Oversight.
Many auditors.
I feel like it's a continuation of a theme that we were talking about last time, which is we don't just build risk programs for risk programs' sake. There's a purpose. There's some kind of goal, and then the next piece is to sort of sketch out then what's the minimum that's going to satisfy that goal. What are the things that need to be accomplished?
Right.
So, folks need to accept. There will be folks who need to accept accountability for things. A certain level of resources needs to get allocated. This is the level to which we are going to shoot for this year, and such and so forth.
Right. You know, here's another example. Do you actually have policies and procedures around risk management?
Again, yeah, that reminds me of SAS 70, which is like, you get audited against your own policy, so the first step is setting your policy.
Yeah. No, it's as much as you just put a really horrible taste in my mouth by using the term SAS 70, but it's true, right? I think you establish your governance is what we might be saying here, but you take your policies, you get senior management buy-in, you get your resources, right? You get the commitment of the resources, and you've modeled this loosely off of, you know, Bosley things, if you want to say, use it that way. So what's next? Great. I got management and I told them in a quarter, you know, I will have something else for them. And I go off back to my desk and I sit there and I think, great, I got my CFO's buy-in. What next, Chris?
Well, what next is, how do you begin collecting information that will allow you to have, you know, these more productive conversations with management? are you actually doing monitoring and some level of reporting? And let's dig into monitoring just a little bit. I think we had a question come in through either Twitter or Sierra or something to that effect around how do you know when, you know, what your capacity and your appetite for risk is, which is a really big question to be asking. But the first way that I would respond to that is, you know, we like to ask the question, so what? So what if you have this? Really, what does it mean? But when you're talking about capacity and appetites and limits, is do you even have loss data? Are you looking for it? Because without some form of loss data, you're not going to be able to answer the relative to what question. So what if you identify all of these issues that are in your environment and you're doing some form of measurement of how bad your exposure could be? Until you can say this is how bad it could be and say relative to how much we're actually experiencing, that opens up a whole new dialogue with management. So you have to be looking for actual loss and then always comparing it to your potential loss that could have happened, unexpected loss in this case, or other forms of loss that maybe you're not realizing today, but the exposure is in your environment. I think that's part of the what's next, Alex.
That makes sense to me. You know, going in trying to establish tolerance scales using historical loss data, maybe even going in on the, you know, from other expense-based losses, but maybe even going in on the, you know, on the actual production side and saying, okay, what are tolerable losses for sales, right? What is tolerable waste and look, you know, possibly even tolerable losses from a retail side, right? If you're in retail, going to loss prevention and saying, hey, what makes everybody happy if unhappy, you know, and what makes everybody steaming mad and what makes you worried for your job? There are different ways, and I've been able to do this with back in my consultant days with companies of all sizes to really sit down with an executive and kind of give them qualitative labels and scenarios. At what point do you need to worry about whether or not you're a going concern? Right. Okay. So that's our total critical severe top loss segment. So I work them down to what is a pain in the butt, but you know, and we're not going to be happy, but nobody's going to lose their job. We're just going to make sure we don't do that again, do that improperly again. You know, you go through that sort of scale there with executives, and they'll talk to you if you're comfortable with giving, you know, they'll be comfortable with ranges. And if you're comfortable talking them through ranges, they'll give you what you need to do to work. That's been my experience. Now, I think that makes sense as the next step. You've got your governance, you're starting to get your parameters in terms of appetite, severities, tolerances, those sorts of things. What's our next step? So now you've got all of that down. Where do you go from there?
I'm sorry, what do we all have down? That sounded like a lot of stuff.
Yeah, well, we've talked about, you know, hey, you need to talk to your executives, get policy in, get buy-in. And Chris suggested, thanks to Philip Byers' tweet/email, loss tolerance, risk appetite, those sorts of things would be good to establish next. And I think that's great because it does establish risk boundaries for you to work within. Especially if you can get them in like five levels from this is not a big deal to this is a really big deal.
Right. Well, you know, I sort of brushed over monitoring and reporting, and I guess I would just focus on reporting. You have to start sharing information with your senior management. And, you know, it's going to vary, you know, how you start sharing information and the actual quality of the information that you're sharing is definitely going to vary depending upon your maturity. You know, I was at, you know, one organization where just reporting the number of issues of high, medium, low, severe, peanut butter, jelly, and what have you was useful. It was actually useful for a period of time until you started developing that culture of risk, where then they wanted more information once that was no longer meaningful. But you have to start reporting something, start having that dialogue, which is going to force, and in a lot of cases, if you're doing it right and they're engaged, is going to force advances in maturity for that organization, because they're going to get bored with the same information time after time after time.
You mentioned a phrase there, Chris, that I'd like to come back to, developing the culture of risk, because I think once you hit that crawl stage, that's going to be an important concept. But before we go there, in terms of reporting and talking to senior managers, and in terms of trying to set the stage for those conversations within the context of loss tolerances and these sort of Basel categories, and I would encourage people to think of what they're developing as a sort of risk portfolio, right? If you are an investor, you've got this asset portfolio and they have their upsides and their downsides, and you can think of it that way and present it to management and say, we're managing this portfolio of assets. Our return expected is X. Our loss potentials are Y, and so forth. You can think of your IT asset landscape in much the same way. We've got Linux servers, we've got mainframes, we've got desktops, and so forth. And all this, you know, or you can frame it up by business process, right? So in banking, we have payment systems, and we have online banking systems, and so forth. Right? You can develop your portfolio that way as well. Mm-hmm. But start establishing that portfolio, and once you've established that, that sort of this is how we're talking about our portfolio, whether it's IT assets because you're solely information risk, or whether you've got an operational risk group that you need to report to and they're doing business level risk and control self-assessments that you need to fit into, or whatever it is, developing that portfolio allows you to say, oh, well, now I need to go get more risk information, whatever that may be, control architectures, loss data, you know, just number of systems around laptops, right? I need mm-hmm. to think of laptops as a portfolio element, and how do we manage that? That to me is kind of setting up that crawl state. And then as you present, you say, this is kind of how we view our risk portfolio. Here's what's going on, as well as giving them scenario discussion, because everybody loves the scenario discussion. What's our top 10 risks, and tell us all about them, that sort right. of thing. That's different from the portfolio management piece. But
I'm gonna interrupt soon.
Yeah, go ahead.
So I think I like where you're going, but I think you're sort of jumping back and forth between crawl and run, in the sense that if we are starting to talk about things like risk tolerances, or risk portfolio, that suggests that you have already figured out what I think a lot of people trip over as they're trying to crawl it, which well, actually it's more like a speed bump if you're crawling, you trip if you're walking, is the criterion for evaluation. I mean, risk tolerance is actually a really advanced, I think, concept to be incorporated into a risk program. Just being able to measure risk is you need to have before you can actually have coherent conversations about tolerance. And
really? Really?
Yes, really.
I would disagree with that.
You don't.
Unfortunately,
how can you have a conversation about tolerance before you've actually measured risk?
I don't know. Ask Target.
But
I guarantee you.
What does that even mean?
I guarantee you their tolerance for really large adverse events is a lot lower today than it was a couple of months ago. Okay, so unfortunately, tolerance comes into play when you have these sort of shock events, things that come out of nowhere because you weren't really having discussions to begin with. All of a sudden, you have at least one data point of what badness
really is. That's not a mature conversation,
Chris. Well, but it may not be a mature conversation, but it factors into a lot of but it does happen in the real world.
A real risk tolerance conversation requires some organizational and program maturity.
A sophisticated conversation does, but unfortunately,
I stubbed my toe is not really a tolerance conversation.
Other than they know they don't want to do it again.
Right. Sure.
But so that's it is a quasi.
I don't think is a tolerance conversation. It's an, oh my God, we have risk exposure situation. It could be the lightning rod for actually being able to start building a risk program.
And it could be, but it's also a data point of we don't want to experience this pain again. It factors into a conversation.
Of course, I
definitely agree with you. It's not a sophisticated conversation if you haven't been building up to that to begin with. But a lot of I have seen companies do knee-jerk reactions.
Yes,
because of shock events, things that caught them off guard, that all of a sudden then changed their perception of what effective risk management is and what they don't ever want to experience again. I don't know what Walls has to do with this, but...
What's that?
I don't know. Alex is spouting off something.
Oh, well, he tends to do that. So what I was going to say is that I didn't bring up SAS 70 to freak everyone out. I brought up SAS, well, kind of, maybe a little. I brought it up because in the past, it lacks specific criteria, right? I mean, folks get audited against their own policies, and there's certainly a place for that. But it says nothing about what kind of policies are appropriate. So back in the days before PCI, when the payment card industry was trying to figure out how to get everyone to a certain baseline, one of the things that was considered was, hey, how about instead of having everyone pay a special breed of assessors to check their compliance against what we think are industry standard best practices, we instead have them just pile this into their existing audit practice and hand off just let us know they passed their SAS 70. And the answer is no, because the SAS 70 has zero criteria. So what I wanted to ask is if we think that there are specific criteria that risk programs should meet, or if that's sort of the antithesis of risk, because such a large portion of risk is assessment and then determining criteria based on the business requirements of the entity.
That question was for you, Jay.
It really wasn't.
The question was, well, first was the comment, which is that I think that discussions of risk tolerance and risk portfolios and such are a little more sophisticated than or further along on the maturity curve than crawl. That was a comment. And then part of the reason why I think that is because it sounds like being able to assess and measure and talk about risk in terms requires some sort of criterion. And I wanted to figure out if you guys agreed with me on that, that in order to have some of these higher level conversations, you actually have some sort of pre-work to do.
I think the criterion is your first criterion to me is tolerance. And
a bread box worth of tolerance? A baby's arm worth of tolerance? Like, how do you talk about it in terms, like specific terms?
Dollars. Chris is,
and you think
Chris
that's wrong?
I'm sighing out loud. I'm doing a meh. I think tolerance is qualitative.
Yes.
In the crawl stage. Okay, so I'm going to grant you that. I agree with you, Allie. I know we don't agree very often.
And contextual. That's right.
I agree with you. Now, what I don't agree with is around portfolio. Ooh. Wow.
She's like that tonight.
I know. I thought Jay was the pissy one tonight.
Oh, he is.
But one point that I do also want to follow up that Alex made was around the portfolio of risk. And you spoke to this too, Allie. You know, I sort of characterize it as the dimensions of risk that are applicable to your organization. And it is going to be different from organization to organization, whether it's in the context of the products that the risk is associated with within your organization, or let's say maybe it's in the context of, you know, Basel II loss events. Wherever we find this bad stuff, we categorize it by the Basel II loss events, or whether it's categorized by ISO 27002. I mean, there's so many different dimensions and metadata that you can associate with all these bad things, but something is going to be meaningful to the senior leadership of that organization. And if it's meaningful to them, then roll with it, period. So I think that's a valid point, Alex, but I don't think, to what Allie maybe have suggested a little bit earlier, I don't think the portfolio or the dimension that you're viewing badness through is an advanced capability. I think that can be established at the crawl stage, that this is how we're going to view risk as we stumble across it.
Okay.
But let's agree to disagree.
We didn't even get to this part B of my question, but go ahead.
I tried to.
I know. Right, thanks, Chris.
Go to part B. Fine. Go to part B. There was a silence. I thought the horse was dead. Part B, Allie, hit it.
Well, I'm just wondering if, given all of the choices of options that are available in risk, if we are going to be able to shoot for an objective and repeatable process, or if we just have to continue to treat risk as highly contextual and a special snowflake in whatever environment it's in, which I think is a struggle for folks putting together a risk program, because it's easier if there's something concrete to work from. And that's one of the reasons why I really liked the what Chris put forward as a really good place to start. I'm just wondering if there's something as useful for the next stage of maturity of a risk program. Special snowflake, Alex, or possible to get to something repeatable?
I don't know. Now that I think about it, right? Now that I sit down and think about it.
Wait, AJ, make sure you're double recording this. Sorry, buddy.
I really am looking back and I'm thinking, you know, it's all going to depend on the culture. I'm running forward with how I think things should go. And I think we're best suited to give people different options and different tools and different strategies to try. And so I can't disagree. And I can't say that just because I think things should be one way, that's the way they're always going to work and they always have to work. So that's not really answering your question, I know, but that's what I was thinking about.
Right. And I think that this whole topic or ideal of risk culture is a standalone topic, because CROs and risk leaders are very intentional about managing and developing, we're really developing and managing the culture of risk within an organization.
Effective ones are.
Right. Well, right. Exactly. And but I believe you start planting seeds of risk culture at the crawl stage, but it traverses throughout the maturity curve. I mean, it traverses the maturity curve. You're never done managing culture.
I think that's true. And I think part of what happens in crawl is establishing the language, right?
Yes.
Because you can't effectively communicate or build out that culture without speaking the same language.
Right.
Which does suggest some sort of approach to assessment and description of risk.
Mm-hmm.
And okay. then you can get into topics like tolerance.
Eventually you will be. Yes. I agree.
Cool.
So,
Holy cow. It ended up that we agreed.
So any parting comments on this? I guess before you answer that for the listeners, a thank you for bearing with us up to this point. But if you have any comments or additional questions about something we've covered in this episode or the previous episode, shoot it to us, because if we want to expand on it, but we want to make sure we're sort of hitting the mark. And hopefully we'll put a link to these 33 AMA standards that I'm referencing in our notes. But keep on providing us this feedback, and we'll try to address it in future episodes.
Maybe in next episode we can talk about risk culture.
Ooh.
Ooh.
Ooh. Ooh. Can we synth that and like play a song with us all saying ooh?
I'm sure Jay could do anything if he put his mind to it.
He does look like Thomas Dolby.
My wife. So check this out. Yes. My wife, when we were prepping for the recording tonight, my wife walks by and she goes, "Is that a picture of you?" And you know, I sort of look at her and I could see like this little twinkle in her eye. It was a picture of Jay. So thanks, Jay.
And you're talking about the picture of me that you have on your desk?
Yeah, Jay's blocking me, and I never knew it. Sorry. It's a little bit risque. Oh, goodness. All right, what else we got going on tonight?
Hey, it's February. Anyone doing anything at the end of the month?
I'm just trying to get to March. That's really my goal at this point.
Because in the end of February, you are going to be...
Oh, at RSA.
And?
And drinking. Where are you going with this?
And doing a book signing since June.
Oh, right. Yes, sorry. Speaking and doing a book signing. And
yeah. What are you talking about this year, Jay?
Let's see. Tuesday, I'm speaking with Wade Baker. Wade finally got accepted, and we are talking about big lessons from small data. So rather than talk about big data and all the hype and all that crap, we're going to talk about just focusing on the lessons from small data. And that rather than jumping to this, you know, topic of big data and buying products and trying to get all the stuff, just focus on what you can learn from small data.
Real quick, but you said he finally got accepted. So here's a guy, mind you, that has basically produced one of the most groundbreaking pieces of evidence-based security, risk management, epidemiological look at security, whatever you want to call it, single-handedly brought to life possibly scientific reasoning into our field, and he finally gets accepted at RSA. How does that work?
Yeah. It's crazy.
Because he doesn't make mom jokes?
Yeah.
Wait, what? You make mom jokes and so you get accepted into RSA? Is that what you're saying?
Apparently. It works for you.
All right.
Have we invited Wade to come hang out with us?
We should.
We should. Let's do that.
I didn't get invited to come hang out with you.
No. Command appearance.
Do you mean on the podcast, I assume?
Yes, that's what I mean.
Yeah. Maybe sure. Maybe when the DBIR comes out.
Yes.
Or at RSA, either way. Alex, how many panels are you on this year?
How many panels are you not on this year, Alex?
I'm on two panels. I'd also like to mention that B-Sides is happening this year.
Oh, is that the other organization that you're on the board of?
That I work with the B-Sides Las Vegas folks and B-Sides San Francisco. We're helping out, and so it's a good time, and you should go to B-Sides because it's awesome.
That's great. TrustyCon is also happening at the same time. And there's a lot of sort of side sessions. So eFraud Forum, I think that there's going to be some lawyers in town talking about security stuff. Metricon.
Woo, Metricon. Who's doing Metricon this year?
I should mention that because I'm the co-chair of Metricon.
Yes, please.
Plug it. So Metricon is Friday of RSA. It's going to be in Moscone Center again. And the topic, the theme, you know, is under the sea. So wear your best. No, I'm just kidding. The theme is the theme is behind the curtains, and we want to try and get people up there that are actually doing metrics, doing some type of data collection, data presentation, and have them talk about behind the curtains what actually goes on. So very hands-on. I'm getting up at the end of the day, going to talk about how we get our data for the DBIR and the type of things that we do. And we've got several other really nice presenters that are going to talk about some of their efforts around data and collection and analysis and presentation of it. So should be a really good conference. I'm actually looking forward to it on Friday. And if you're interested in attending, it's free. It's open. Just read the securitymetrics.org webpage and send off an email that you want to attend.
Fantastic.
Damn, that's exciting.
It is.
Yeah.
So I have exciting news related to RSA. Are you guys ready?
Yeah.
Yes.
I got a press pass.
What?
Wow.
And not only did I get a press pass, it was due to this podcast because my blog wasn't bloggy enough. I haven't updated it in 2 months.
Does this mean I could get a press pass?
Apparently.
If you want to be triple or quadruple badged or whatever, sure. I think that next year you can apply for a press pass.
Well, no, because like this year, if I get a press pass, doesn't that mean I get to like, I don't know, interview people and run around with a tape recorder and video camera and do press stuff? Isn't that what you do?
Yeah.
Don't you get special compensation?
No.
Like, you can't get arrested if you have a press pass. Is that right?
Right, and I can park anywhere. No, Alex. You can get arrested with a press pass.
No, I'm pretty sure that's against the Constitution. I think if I get a press pass, they can't arrest me. I'm doing that.
Okay, let's see how that goes.
Yeah. Are you? So you're not speaking, Allie?
Oh, no.
Are you going to be at B-Sides or Metricon or both or any?
I may be at Metricon. It depends on how that week.
How tired you are by Friday?
What's that?
How tired you are by Friday?
That too. So, but I'm really looking forward to it, actually. I think it's going to, there's so much going on this year in addition to RSA proper that I think it will be a good time. And I'm actually, as far as my own sort of independent research, I'm already getting started trying to get prepped for my Source Boston presentation, which isn't till April, but I actually need to do some research. So,
hey, I'm prepping for a panel at InfoWorld in April, as well as a talk on big data stuff.
Hey, well.
Isn't that thrilling?
Yes. Let's record another episode between now and then we can talk in more depth about it, about both of our presentations in April.
Why, what a great idea, Allie.
Thank you, Alex.
So,
anything else guys, to chat about?
Do you guys know Jay has a book?
Oh, God.
And you bought a copy, Alex.
I did. I own a Kindle version of Jay's book because apparently Kindle is like what, $20 less than hard copy?
The price is going all over the place. I don't know what's going on.
They print that thing on gold leaf or what?
Till RSA. I want to help RSA. I want to help Jay and Bob make their book number one selling book at RSA, and I want a signed copy from
Absolutely.
Jay and Silent Bob.
Yeah. Yep, and we're going to be doing, I think I mentioned, a book signing Wednesday morning at 10 a.m. So folks are going to be at RSA Wednesday morning. We're going to be in the bookstore doing a book signing.
What time again?
10 a.m.
Wow.
So
Will there be refreshments at the RSA bookstore? Hey, Jay.
Huh?
Will refreshments be provided?
I doubt it.
I'll have refreshments, Chris, but it'll be in my attrition.org decanter, my little pocket one. I'll share with you. Bring some tomato juice.
So if the four listeners of the podcast could show up to that book signing and line up and pose for a picture that it looks like we had a line there, that would be great.
We love you guys.
I just want to time it. Just so it looks, get a picture so we can put it up on our website or something, you know, that says, yeah, we were busy with a line. So,
yeah, if you see any of us during RSA, please introduce yourselves. We'd love to get to know more of the folks who are listening to our podcast.
Yeah.
No, I've never been to an RSA.
Wow.
But you'll be at this one.
I won't be.
No, you will be, because all the listeners that come up and introduce themselves to me, I'll tell them I'm you.
You better shave your head first.
Done.
All right.
All right.
Allie and I are in sync tonight. So we said all right at the same time.
We totally did. So yeah. What was everybody's action items? It was go vote in the Sierra election, come to RSA and buy a copy of Jay's book. And did we have anything else?
Yeah, keep the feedback coming. This was, it's actually been very refreshing to get feedback about some of our episode content. So keep it coming.
Chris is lonely.
Lonely at Fort Risk. That sounds like a bad song.
So my picture on your desk is not enough?
Well, I don't know. It could be.
Okay. I think that's a wrap.
I can color in the picture.
And thanks for listening, everyone.